Welcome, everyone, to the Beer Guys Radio Show. We are happy to be here, and we're very happy to have you with us. Get together, share a brew, have some conversation, tell news stories, talk about tin fish, all of the fun stuff that we do, and just have a good time with it. Again, this is Beer Guys Radio. I am Tim Dennis. Brian Hewitt, how the heck are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Tim?
I'm good, man. I do think this time I said I'm good, or did I just say my name?
I don't think you did, and man, I'm never sure if you said it.
So before the show, I mentioned my energy level is low today. I should have had a coffee stout. I should have chose a coffee stout or had a coffee or ate my Wheaties or something. So I'm going to work to have my senses about me, because the last couple of weeks I have thought that I've said that, but I think I just said my name. So it's I'm just totally off the rails there. But Mo Mike Nate, producer extraordinaire, how you doing?
Glad to be back on the microphone after last week.
Good, man. Yeah. You had to just sit on the sidelines and drink beer last week, huh?
Yeah, it's tough life.
Terrible. But yeah.
They need to put vitamin B12, because I know you can get dissolvable ones, because I take them to keep my energy levels up. They need to put that in beer. Like B12 beer, right?
What is that one NA beer that does have some, I think, vitamins and stuff in it? I can't remember the name right now, but it's a hydrating energy in a beer.
Well-being brewing, I think it's well-being, I think that's right.
I could be wrong. I know it's supposed to be an energizing, energetic, non-alcoholic beer. So maybe
with some of the ghosts, they pitch them as being kind of like the substitute, kind of an electrolyte type of thing ish like more hydrating than dehydrating.
Salt in there.
Dogfish Head in there, slightly mightier. I forget which goes it was, but they were kind of pushing that as maybe not healthy, but healthy adjacent.
Healthy adjacent. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Is it healthy? In the proximity. No, but that's it. Yeah. So Tyler here is saying that he had a coffee stout from Martin House earlier this week, and he's sharing with us that was a 16% beer. I'm not sure that would have had I would have accomplished my goal with a 16% coffee stout, or would I just been normal? It may have just balanced out if I had done that.
That would be interesting. Yeah. You got to get one
for science, right? For science. So guys, before we dive into the news, I've got to say something I was supremely excited about this week. And I know you guys are disappointed because I've harassed you to try and get you to watch it. Have either of you started watching the Fallout series?
I've seen episode one.
Okay. All right. Well, you're off to a start there. What'd you think of the first episode, Nate?
I'm digging it so far. So I've only played Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas, which is super older.
That's enough to have a foundation there. So, yeah, I've played, I think, 3 New Vegas, Fallout 4 and Fallout 76, and just a big fan overall of that. If you're not a fan of the games or you don't have any idea what we're talking about, it's kind of a retro futuristic post-apocalyptic world. And it's when in like the 50s or something, when there was the Cold War and that nuclear energy took off. So they've got all these amazing nuclear powered things, but the aesthetic is still very 50s, the cars and things like that. So it's really cool. But you've got these different factions that all think that they are right and they're fighting for what's best for the world. But all of them have a little twist to it, to where the others think they're weird. But even if you're not a fan of the video game, the show is so good, really well done. And I don't think you need to be a fan of the game series to really enjoy the show. But lots of good action, sci-fi, crazy monsters and stuff in there. And I was just super stoked because it's one of my favorite, game series that... Yes, Brian.
Is that the one with the weird nose? Like, it's not quite skull nose, but like it's more.
Yeah. So those are ghouls. Those are people who have been impacted by radiation, but it didn't kill them. They became ghouls. Just so you know, there can also be feral ghouls, which are basically just rabid monsters. So a lot of people don't like ghouls at all, Brian, because maybe they could go feral. Who knows?
I already don't like them. That's all.
Already?
I'm already big.
Yeah. Maybe you should join the Brotherhood of Steel then. That sounds like that would be your faction.
Steel, huh? Don't tell me more.
Yeah. You get cool power armor, Brian, if you do that.
I like power armor. I'd like to have some.
They have a lot of beer brands in the Fallout universe there. So I've recently played through Fallout 4 again, and there's a brewery called the Beantown Brewery because it's set like in Boston. And then there's a brewery called the Button Gwinnett Brewery, which is also relevant to us here in Atlanta because of Button Gwinnett, you know, and his relation here. We've got a Gwinnett County, the name there. But so they've got a lot of different beers, pilsners, lagers, and that. The one of the latest iterations, they brought in their IPAs and all that in there. So you can get a nice cold beer.
This is like a post-apocalyptic world or something like that? Or they just have farms and everything?
Most of this is remnants, is stuff that's left over. But there is, I don't remember the exact details of it, but in one of the Fallouts, there's a mission where you do something. There's a robot that's a brewery. Like he rides around and brews his own beer and then serves beer from himself. And I remember you have to do something to do that. But there's definitely a few breweries throughout the universe that you do different things in that. And then I remember that brewery robot. But anyhow, if you get a chance, if you're looking for a new series to watch, I definitely recommend checking out Fallout. It's very cool.
Sounds good. At some point, I'll probably check it out. Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, guys, we had a bottle share this weekend. Been the first time in a long time. And in keeping with tradition, I left fairly early. And you guys stayed up much later than you should, is my
keeping with tradition, correct? Yes.
Yeah. All right. Nate, what was your favorite from the bottle share?
You know, I think I really enjoyed, I had a bottle of the Vales Push, which was a Saison mixed with a little bit of lager, and it was aged in a wine barrel. I thought it was really nice, light, and had a little bit of lambic qualities to it that I really enjoyed.
Okay. All right. Good stuff. Brian, how about you?
You know, for the sentimentality of it, I think the Hype Whale, the Mayan Hype Whale from Red Brick /ABC, RIP to those guys. I love that. I remember waiting in line for it and back in the days when it was, you know, you didn't wait in line that often, but for them, you never waited in line. And it was such a fun atmosphere. I love that. It took me back to a good time. The Jackie O stuff that we opened up was really good, but that Hype Whale, that's going to be a sentimental favorite of mine. How about you, Tim?
So, Brian, I can relate to the sentimentality of that, but I do believe that our Hypewell Mayan was past its prime. So we had the flavors in there. It had the flavors in there, but I don't think it was kicking quite, you know, as well as it did. Because that's probably what we see. I think you looked it up, Nate, 8 years old or something like that. Seven, eight years old when they had those releases. So that's been a while. But yeah, you know, honestly, I tell you, one of my favorites was the Trillium IPAs. Mm-hmm. And I know that's odd coming from me as that being my favorite, but those are just really good. And Brian, what was the name of the one we had from the brewery that was the wine with Black Tuesday notes?
Yeah, that was, I would say, my biggest kind of disappointment. It's called Thomas Rutherford. I think it's in Untapped as a grape ale. And it's aged, it's a blend of, I think it's Black Tuesday, but blended with a lot of grapes and re-fermented in Cabernet barrels or Cabernet Franc grapes. I'm zooming in on a picture of the bottle share, honestly. Franc grapes aged in French and American oak puncheons. So, yeah, it's a mixture of a lot of grapes in Black Tuesday, and it really became very winey with a little bit of like a stout character to it. It was not at all Black Tuesday, even remotely.
And see, I think that may be my fault or our fault, because I think we were all under the same impression that we kind of expected Black Tuesday with some wine notes to it. But it was served in a wine bottle. I believe it was still, wasn't it?
It had a little carb to it.
A little bit of carb, but it was definitely more a red wine with some Black Tuesday notes than the other way around. You know, some barricadillo, So I don't think it was bad at all. It was actually quite tasty. It just wasn't what I expected going into it.
Exactly. Yeah. I was disappointed just because I was looking forward to a Black Tuesday style beer. It's a great wine. It like I drank it. And I'm like, this is just wine. I'm like, it's not even close.
Yeah,
it's not like,
right. This is wine.
I couldn't even talk myself into thinking it was stout. I'm like, no. This is a really nice wine, but it's just a wine. You know, it's not Black Tuesday. So
if you didn't know there were some Black Tuesday notes in that, do you think you would have been able to pick it out if someone had poured you a glass of it?
I wouldn't have said the Black Tuesday in there. I would have probably noticed that there was like, there's a little bit of like a chocolatiness to this. That's kind of interesting, you know, for a wine. It's, I think it was a little on the darker side too. I'm like, this is a really interesting tasting and looking wine. And the body was heavier than I think you would typically get out of a wine.
Darker than a typical red, heavier body. Yeah.
Correct. And I absolutely would drink it again, but I would drink it. I would go into drinking it, assuming it wasn't, I don't remember what it cost, but I would drink it again, but I would go in knowing what it was.
$9,000.
It was part of a special package deal that I bought last year to get some Black Tuesday, honestly, and just a bunch of other fun things that we can't get in Georgia. So I don't have any regrets, but I did expect it.
No regrets. And I have to Venmo Nate $3 for the unfortunate loss in poker that I suffered.
Well, that's okay. So,
yeah. Or just
that's all right.
Or just own up to it next time. I got you next time, man. I got you next time. So I'm looking at Thomas Rutherford on the brewery website right now. Nate sent me the link on this. And there's this thing called Shop Pay. There's a few different ones. Shop Pay Sezzle is another one of that. But like they're paying in interest-free installments. Like, man, if you've got to finance a bottle of beer, if you have to make payments on a bottle of beer or wine, beer, wine, hybrid, it says right there, beer, wine, hybrid. So, but if you've got to make payments on it, you shouldn't get it. That's all there is to it.
Probably not. Yeah.
You just simply should not get it.
If this is a gift or a special occasion thing, you're getting, you know, you're getting your first big job or you're, I don't know, graduating. I get that. But it's just like, I really want this beer. I'm like, you know what? Pass on it. Maybe put some food on your table first. $55 for a bottle of this. It's sold out. Yeah. But I think in the wine world, that's not too unreasonable for a quality wine. And I think it was pretty quality. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not angry at it.
It was fun to try it. Definitely very interesting. That was definitely a fun one to try and see. Unique, very unique there. So,
yeah.
Well, guys, totally on the other side of wines and beers and things with fruit and Mayan flavors in them. This week was the 508th anniversary of the Rheinheiskebot. And Brian, you actually looked up a little history on the Rheinheiskebot. Tell us more about it, Brian.
Yeah, I pulled it out of a Smithsonian magazine from the 500th anniversary, so that's a little old.
Okay.
But I think everything is still up to date. But yeah, it's kind of interesting. I didn't know a lot of this stuff, but it was originally called the Substitutionsverbot, which means substitution prohibition, when it was created back in 1516 by Duke Wilhelm IV. It didn't get the Rheinheitsgebot name until World War I, and that was as a result of a sticky name given to it during a tax debate, and people just ran with it. And it was just created to ensure drinker safety, because before it was created, people were putting hallucinogenic and poisonous ingredients into beer because they wanted to make it delicious and have it do things to you. And for a lot of people, beer was actually food and how they got by. So you didn't want to get poisoned by drinking your food, basically. So Rheinheitsgebot still figures in the German taxes to this day. You don't actually have to follow the Rheinheitsgebot rules in Germany so long as you leave the word beer off your packaging. That's my understanding. But they're still pretty strict about everything that's not Rheinheitsgebot in Bavaria. So you need to watch out there. Since 1987, as a result of a European court's ruling, they can no longer ban beer that does not adhere to Rheinheitsgebot from other countries. So I think some French people sued them because they were like banning their imports because it doesn't adhere to Rheinheitsgebot. So now they can get all that stuff. So you can get all of the fun stuff that we get here, but Rheinheitsgebot's still a source of pride there, is from what I understand, at least according to this article from 2016. So.
Yeah, Germans are rightfully proud of their beer. You know, it's a very, very good stuff happening over there. So I think it's interesting, you know, especially with what we've done with beer here in America, because we're going to put stuff in it, guys. That's all there is to it. We're going to put stuff in it. We're going to barrel age it. You know, it's something that reminds me going to the Atlanta Cask Ale tasting. And we've had a few fellows come over from like the UK that are real ale enthusiasts. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like sending them through a little shop of horrors, because we don't do cask ale that they're expecting here. You know, it's going to be an IPA that they put coconut and cinnamon sticks in. It's going to be a thick stout. That's, I think we had a chocolate mint stout last year that was actually really good if you're down for that kind of thing. But, you know, we're going to funk it up here in America.
I think that because we're not used to that, if we put beer into a different format, we've got to do something to make it special, So we just add extra ingredients. I liked how we used to always have, you go to a place, they always had a cask of something, and they just grab some random stuff. I'm like, we're just throwing a bunch of cinnamon in this IPA. Would you like to try it? Like, man, that sounds terrible. So, yes, let me have one.
We did a collaboration with a brewery once and did a quad that we put a bunch of stroopwafels in.
That's right.
You know, just go for it. I have literally seen a brewer pour stout into a blender and throw a handful of mini Snickers bars in there before.
I think I know who you're talking about.
I think you probably do. Yeah. So, yeah, interesting. That's definitely an extreme end of things. You know, something I found interesting with this, though, was them talking about people put hallucinogenic and poisonous ingredients in there. It's amazing what people will do if they're allowed to, like if they can get away with it. Like, I don't remember the exact details of the story, but it was either A1 sauce or like Heinz 57 sauce, one of those two, I believe, that when it was released, it was put in clear glass bottles. And the reason being is he wanted people to see that it was real ingredients, because apparently others made sauces to use on your meat and they may put sawdust or whatever in there as fillers for it. So just the fact that he put a sauce in a clear bottle was a bold move at the time, which sounds totally insane.
It was Heinz. Yeah. That's a whole thing about making it shelf stable and then making it like not full of pollutants. So yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Ketchup has a really weird story, and it's connected and related to like Heinz 50. It's like all the other sauces, like going way back to the Italian garum sauce and Worcester sauce, or however you say that stuff. It's all related, even though they're completely different tasting things. So it's a very interesting story.
I believe I heard that a lot of those like bottled sauces like that, they were invented at the time because a lot of the meat was very low quality. Like you couldn't just go get fresh meat, and people still would eat it. They would just want a sauce to cover it up. So you'd get your rotten meat and then pour sawdust sauce on it. So it's amazing anybody just lived at all back then. Crazy stuff.
Well, and when I think about back to my parents' day, when everything, they were obsessed about, well, everything being really well cooked, because there was a very good chance you could get food poisoning, and they developed a taste for it. Well, you know how you deal with the fact that your meat's charred to a freaking brisket or a crisp, you know, like put a charcoal.
Sauce on it.
You put sauce on it. You add all that flavor back in the form of sauce and, you know, the thickening agents. Yeah, sawdust will do it. I think. Oh, I don't think it's necessarily toxic for you. I don't know.
Insane. Yeah, I guess pork is healthy now. I know when I was a kid, pork was still, it's like, oh, you got to be careful. Got to be careful with your pork. I saw a thing with Anthony Bourdain where he was in some Asian country, but they ate chicken medium rare. And he said it was totally fine there because basically the chicken was alive 30 minutes ago. You know, they went out.
Yeah.
He's like, so this is fresh meat. It's, you know, you don't have to worry about these, these concerns here with that. And I was like, I still don't know if I can get on board with medium rare chicken. I don't think
I've seen that. Underdone chicken, and it's actually a little slightly physically revolting to see it. I don't know why. I'm not squeamish about it. I've had tartar and things like that, but something about chicken that's not 100% there. No, not chicken tartar, but like rare stuff. I've had sushi. I'm not like Mo Mike Nate, who won't touch any of that stuff, but I've had a bunch of that, and chicken is still a place I just I can't bring myself to go. And when I see it underdone, I'm like, oh, get that away from me. Get thee behind me, Satan. You know,
get thee behind me, Satan, with your.
You know, the funny thing about Brian Sayman is I've had tartar before.
Okay, what did you think of it, Nate? Yes, tartar on my fish.
I mean, I enjoyed it. I would never would have ordered the dish on my own, but I was out with a friend, actually leaving Goodwood over in Duluth, Georgia, going to a restaurant nearby called Falling Rabbit, and had beef tartare, and it was very interesting.
Okay, all right, I know it's popular in Ethiopian cuisine. I've had it at Ethiopian restaurants, and carpaccio is, you know, thin slices there, and
it's great.
Yeah, it's nice, interesting.
Raw maybe the chicken was done that way. This is underdone, but it's super thin.
A little chicken carpaccio there.
Yeah, chicken carpaccio.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Brian, this may come as a total surprise to you, but Bud Light's consumer loyalty still on the decline, man. They did not get back those fans that they lost with all the drama last year. Does that shock and awe you over there?
I'm shocked. You know, honestly, because I did see this getting making the rounds this week. I'm surprised. Not that it's down. I didn't expect that a lot of those people were ever going to go back. But it's continuing to decline a year after the whole thing that happened last year. That I don't even care about getting into the whole influencer nonsense. So they started to pick back up, according to a survey that was released by Goldman Sachs in their Beverage Bites report. They were tracking the respondents' recommendations for a brand, if it's positive or negative. And it was starting to improve for Bud Light throughout the summer. As you might expect, people got over it. They moved on. You even had was a Kid Rock or somebody saying, okay, the time's over. We need to go back and we can drink it again, that sort of thing. So that was moving on. And for some reason, it took another sharp dip in February and March of this year. I don't know if it's an anniversary thing or whatever. There's no clear indication as to why, but it's dropped a lot. The overall Bud franchise is still improving. It's a little on the negative side in terms of what people think of it, but their sales are doing better than they're actually expecting, according to the people who track the finances. So it's really weird. I didn't expect the people that left to ever really go back in large numbers, but I didn't expect this to continue to be a negative and growingly negative thing like it is. So I don't even know what to make of it.
Because that kind of decision when something like that happens is a snap decision. You're not angry about it for 6 months and then decide you're going to quit.
Yeah.
So I'd be curious to know why they took another big hit there. You know, what happened there? You know, did somebody run a sale? Though others decided to, you know, go out and try a different brand or something.
I mean, that's possible. I'm wondering. I don't follow this stuff. I don't know if there's some sort of a word of mouth. Remember what happened last year? Well, let's stick it to them again this year. I don't know if that's a thing because I'm not getting that memo. If that memo is going around, the timing is interesting because it's around a year at this point, and it's spiked. Well, I guess spiked, the opposite of spiked. It valleyed. It valleyed right around the year. So I'm like wondering what that's about. So I don't know. I have no idea.
Interesting. Yeah. So again, Brian, kind of like you said, I didn't figure they would pick back up. A lot of people said, well, people will get over this and they'll be back to drinking their Bud Light. And I'm like, no, man, this is different. You know, this is different. You know, the people that are Bud Light drinkers, they're going to just change brands, you know, correct. And they'll stick with that. You know, they're going to go to you know, a Miller, a Coors, or what have you out there, even if it's in within the same, even if it falls under the AB umbrella, because I remember a lot of people doing that. They're like, I've switched out. Look at this. And people are like, you idiot. That's another AB InBev brand.
Yeah.
So,
and they do that. And the thing is the perception of Bud as a whole, like all the other Bud brands, is a little negative, but not nearly as bad as Bud Light. And, you know, there's always the possibility with these surveys that they just, by random chance, oversampled the people that still dislike Bud Light a lot. Mm-hmm. And that it could just be a fluke, too. You never know. Sure. Because the actual sales numbers don't seem to be maybe as bad as that survey says. But, again, that's Goldman Sachs saying it. So I assume that they do a good job with these sorts of things. They do need to track them for, you know, I don't know, staying alive and making money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, consumer sentiment can mean a lot. You know, it's a question for you, Brian. Did you see on Twitter recently, there's a Goose Island beer that was really popular. And back in the day, it was one a lot of people would seek out. But Goose Island Sophie. And did you see that? I believe you did. We'd mentioned that. The drama on Twitter over Goose Island Sophie.
Yeah. So I did see the picture of it. I haven't looked into it too much, but it looks like it had been a farmhouse ale, a saison, and it became a Belgian ale. I forget if it was a Belgian wheat ale or just a Belgian ale, a Belgian style ale or something like that. And there was some mention of it with laid back with an orange slice, and like it was very reminiscent of kind of like a Blue Moon type of thing. And people I saw people talking about it and being very, very upset with it. I've had the beer. I've had Sophie. I think it's really good. I haven't had it in a lot of years, though. And it was great, but it was a very pricey and very large format beer. So,
One of Goose Island's premium offerings. They had Sophie, Matilda. I think you looked up, Brian. Jillian was one. Pepe Nero or something.
Pepe Nero, Hialeah or Hialeah. Hialeah, I think.
Jillian. Hialeah.
Maybe that's it. Hialeah. It's another farmhouse saison. Pepe Nero is. Those are the ones I think I remember. I think I saw Sophie in Jillian and Hialeah or whatever it is. I saw those.
Man, you're all over with those names, man.
Yeah.
Jillian?
Yeah, that's. I don't know.
Is it with a J?
It's with a G. I'm looking at it right now. Okay. Jillian?
Gilligan? Is it Gilligan, Brian?
It's probably Gilligan. No.
Yeah. So I'm looking on Untappd, and apparently I have never checked into Sophie. I know I've had it, and this would have been in the time frame that I was probably a little more about using Untappd, but I don't have it checked in. So I don't know what I thought of it at the time. I think I remember enjoying it back then. But I wasn't sure at first looking at the threads on Twitter if it was just about the orange slice edition or kind of a downward spiral, because someone had posted the labels over the years and said, hey, this has been a gradual progression. You know, it's not like they just flipped the switch overnight. But yeah, laid back with a slice of orange. And I know that a lot of the beer geek crowd get pretty worked up about slices of orange. They're very opinionated on that. Now, you can give them an IPA that has literally trick cereal in it, and some of them will be okay with it. But if you show them a Blue Moon with a slice of orange on it, they're making all kinds of faces in that. So I don't know what it is about the citrus avoidance for some of them. But if it had been cherries or raspberries or something like that, I think at least some of the group probably wouldn't have had as big of an issue with it.
I'm going to start trying to put an orange slice in more of my beers, like a good wedge, so I could squeeze a little in, drop it in the beer, and then drink it. Let me see how this goes.
Yeah,
I was checking it on Untappd and see what people have to say about that.
I was going to make a joke about a shot of it in a stout, but really a nice chocolatey stout with a little squimp of orange in there. A squimp. Okay. Mm-hmm. Would probably be pretty tasty, to be quite honest with you.
You should post it on Twitter so we can see the fallout.
I like chocolate oranges, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I should do that. You know what? Yeah. I did post that I put a bunch of tomato juice in a Guinness, which was pretty bad. I mean, you know what? Why not?
Did you check to see how many unfollows you had that week, Brian?
You know what? I did not. I try not to look at these things. It's just better for my mental health to just not pay that close of attention. So, I mean, I was going to say, what beer should I do? I need to go buy some oranges, and I'm just going to start. I'm going to put a wedge on all of them. Now, should I do the wheel. And then put that up. You know what? I'm going to have to do that.
For a beer, I think you got to do the wheel there. So honor Dr. Keith Villa with the wheel.
Yeah, do it on a Teku.
Orange on a Teku.
Got to get some more beer in my Teku, but I think that'll be great.
I definitely think you should keep us posted. I look forward to seeing all of those on our Twitter feed there as you try them. Make sure to do it to go as far out in left field as you can when you do.
Oh, absolutely.
the most ridiculous styles. I think you should start with like maybe a triple Bach or something along those lines.
Oh, yeah.
In there.
I think how about a goose? Idea. Just a good.
Sure. Lambic. Get like an ancient bottle of Cantillon or something like that. And, you know, put a wedge of orange on there, because there would be a few people you would probably literally kill if they saw that picture. They would just fall over.
Would it be cheating if I got a fake, but very realistic looking orange wedge that I could put on a glass and then enjoy my beer unspoiled? If I did do that with old and a valuable beer, I guess
it depends on how believable your fake orange is, Brian. To be honest,
well, I've seen some dehydrated ones that I think would impart a lot of flavor, but they don't look real.
They look like dried out. They looked at like dried out oranges. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I do have a new Creature Comfort Stout, so I'll just try it with that first and see how that goes.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Start off with that. Go from there. Good stuff. Well, guys, let's talk a little bit about what beers we are sipping on this week. So I right now am, and I think I mentioned it a little earlier, that I am sipping L Max 1 from Bearded Iris. And when we had L Sharpton on the show a while back for L Max Day, we got to try the Monday night version of it. And now I'm trying the Bearded Iris courtesy of Mo, Mike, Nate. This is good. And I think it's pretty darn close, to be honest with you, to the Monday night version. It's been a minute since I tried that one, of course, and I don't have another one right now to compare it to. But I think pretty close, to be quite honest with you, in what they've got here. But again, another good beer. This has got Crystal, Citra Incognito, Centennial, Mosaic, and Simcoe hops. And it is a celebration of air and ale. Brian, speaking of that, did you get the Air Max Atlantas when they released recently? Did you get you a few pairs of those?
I tried so hard to get.
Yeah. Them. Yeah.
No, sorry.
Nate, did you stock up on some Air Max when those came out?
No, I did not.
Nah, just a solid no there. But yeah, that's what I'm sipping on. Nate, what are you drinking this week?
Right now I am sipping. Oh, actually, I only have one beer tonight. I've got from Hop Butcher. I've got the Riwaka Mania, which is a New England IPA with Riwaka and Motueka hops. It's really tasty. It's a nice little hazy IPA. And wanted to channel my inner Tim Dennis and only have one beer tonight. So
there you go. It's good for you. It's good for you. Now, it looks like this is version 8 of Riwaka Mania.
Version 8.
Wow. That's a lot of Riwaka Manias there.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a wrestling-themed beer?
I would assume so. I'm not entirely sure.
Or at least inspired, right?
Probably inspired.
Okay, fair enough. Good stuff. Good stuff. Brian Hewitt, what you drinking?
So I'm already on my last beer, but I pre-gamed with Burial's Bright, which is Italian style pils. That was quite nice. I just finished Boulevard's Dank 7 Belgian IPA. That drank really quick. My can was a little on the old side, but I do enjoy the Belgian style IPA. That's not you don't see that around as often as you once did. So I'm going to be on the lookout for more of those. I think that's the very last can I had of it. And right now I am on Highland Brewing's Lounge Juice Tropical Double IPA. And this is quite a good beer. I picked this up not very long ago. I think I got the entire six pack and I've been sipping on them throughout the past week or so. And it's pretty nice. It's pretty nice. They do good work. So really like that. That's where I'm at.
Pretty good. Pretty good. This is a pretty good beer. You know, Brian, I may normally only have one beer during the show when we record it. Again, I'm running my mouth a lot here, so it's hard to drink several beers. But when the weekend comes around, man, I want to have a few. And, you know, a great place to do that is Terrapin Brewery Atlanta at Truist Park. And, Brian, when you go out there, it's baseball season, man. So whether you're going for a game or not, you can go and hit a home run at Terrapin Brewery Atlanta. You know, when you get that single and you head to first, maybe you want to start with Berry Days, which is a blueberry lager at only 4.7%. You know, you're definitely going to head around for second. There you can grab Terra Moon, which is a peach wit beer. And Brian, speaking of Blue Moon and oranges, this is a collaboration with Blue Moon. Peaches, not oranges, but a collaboration with Blue Moon, 5.7%. Maybe something that would be a little different, a little more your speed. There is now a Los Bravos Ambar, which is an amber Mexican lager at 5.5%. So either of those are going to be great, you know, for your trip to second base. as you head for third, you want to kick it up, man. You really want to kick it up, and you can go for hopsecution. You're jumping up there to 7.3% with this American IPA. And you want to finish strong, Brian, when you go for home. And it's definitely going to be a grand slam. You know it. So when you head for home, grab a double barrel aged red ale, which is an imperial red ale banging at 12.7%. So they've got something for you there at Terrapin Brewery Atlanta to load the bases and head straight home. And it's going to be a good time. So thank you to Terrapin Brewery Atlanta for sponsoring Beer Guys Radio.
And I nearly got one of those double barrel aged red ales for tonight's show, but I decided against it tonight. Maybe in a future show. But
you're not ready to head for home yet, Brian.
Not quite. Right. Yes, I think that'll get me there a little too quickly tonight. So, but one thing that even I forget about at Truck and Tap, and I am talking about Truck and Tap now, is that they don't just have 20 taps of fresh craft beer; they also have beer in cans there. And lately they've been showcasing their canned sour beer options, which include Westbrook's Goes, Fisher Comfort's Athena, and Pontoon Brewing's Crushing Waves. But they're not just limited to cans when it comes to sour and tart beers. So in keeping with that theme, here are my draft picks for the week at Truck and Tap's various locations. At Woodstock, I'm going with Anderson Valley's Briny Melon Goza because I'm still crushing on all Anderson Valley beers right now. At Alpharetta, I will take the Creature Comforts Paradiso with tart cherry, raspberry, and cranberry. Paradiso is always something I look forward to. At Duluth, I'm going Gate City's Party Starter, which is a kettle sour with raspberry, blueberry, and black currants. And finally, at the Lawrenceville location, how about a Six Bridges Sour Continuum with peaches and apricots? That sounds great to me. And one of my early favorites from them was their Sour Continuum line. So if you're looking for something to do beyond grabbing a bite and a drink, of course, you need to check out the Truck and Tap website, truckandtap.com, for information about weekly activities, things like music, trivia, music bingo, even karaoke at some places. And if you don't see it mentioned on the website, definitely click through to their social media account for your favorite location to find out all the details and when things are happening. And once again, thank you to Truck and Tap for your support.
Thanks, guys. We appreciate that. It's absolutely good stuff. Brian, big stuff this week is a Brewers Association kind of gave us a State of the Union address as far as craft beer goes. Overall, Brian, it looks like from looking everything over, things aren't great, but they could be worse is kind of what I gathered from it all.
Yeah. The update from our favorite economist, Bart Watson, at the Craft Brewers Conference this week, he said it's a challenging landscape. That was his phrase for it. There are some positives. There are some negatives. Overall production is down 1%. Tap rooms and brew pubs are also down 2% and 4% respectively. But regional breweries are actually up by 1%. And 44% of breweries all around the country found some amount of growth in 2023. The category is static in terms of the number of drinkers right now. That means the number of people who say they're drinking more craft beer is about equal to the number of people who say they're drinking less craft beer. So you're not going to find a lot of new drinkers out there. And we also do have an issue with the cost of goods. It continues to go up, and it's outpacing the price of beer for many people. But breweries are seeing success in creating new drinking occasions and getting the consumers on board with, like, times they wouldn't ordinarily think of having a beer, they're having a beer. So, and there's a lot of opportunity out there. He points out that there's 125 million Americans out there who do drink, but they haven't had a craft beer in the past month. So yet if you get any of them to start having a few beers, or even, a couple, like one beer a month as opposed to none, you've got a huge, huge growth there. So there's a lot of opportunity out there. But there's a lot of challenge, so it's rough going, but people are getting through it,
So it's a mixed bag. It's a mixed bag. Related to that, Brian, or at least somewhat related, they also put out the list of the 50 largest Brewers Association top 50 craft breweries. So a little positive news there, I guess, a little ray of hope. The number of total breweries in the U.S. was actually up from 2022. So 2023 closed out with 9,906 breweries total, which is up from 9,824 in 2022. I'll be honest, that stat alone surprises me, because based on watching the news and everything going on out there, I definitely would not have guessed that we were a net positive at the end of 2023. Mm-hmm. So they said that openings decreased for a second consecutive year. I'm confused there. So, you know, we ended up with more breweries, but decreasing number of openings.
So there's still openings. So just not.
Like, not the closers, maybe not as many. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Matt's the hard, Ryan. Yeah.
Like I said, I already said, I'm a little fatigued this week, so the brain isn't running, you know, super fast there. But the closing rate increased in 2023, but it's still relatively low at about 4%. Craft's overall beer market share by volume grew to 13.3%, modest increase from 13.1% in 2022. Actual beer production is down 1% from 2022. Big consolidation. Beer companies dominate in the top 10. Their top 12 of the 50 are these, you know, multi-brewery groups that have come together. I think if I remember right, the Tilray now is in the top 10, which was pretty easy. Yeah. Just buy a bunch of brands and boom, you're there. So, you know, we've got Yingling still at number one, which I know they're a popular beer, but I never would have guessed they were bigger than some of these others. But Yingling in at number one. We've got Boston Beer Company, which, of course, encompasses Dogfish Head. So Boston Beer Company and Dogfish Head are together. And number three spot is Sierra Nevada Brewing Company. We've got Duval Mortgage in there, which they have three breweries. Is that right?
Yeah. In the US? They're Duval and they're Boulevard, too, right?
I think so, yeah.
Absolutely. So they've got a few breweries there. Grant Gambrinus is next, which has a Shiner Brewery as part of that. Tilray Brands, which of course is like Montauk. Sweetwater, I think, was the first one way back. Afria acquired Sweetwater. Tilray got Afria, which brought Sweetwater in. So they have several brands, you know, falling under their umbrella there. After that, we've got Artisanal Brewing Ventures in number seven, Brooklyn Brewery at number eight. Monster Brewing, which they're cleaning house there at Monster. You know, they've got Cigar City, and they had Oscar Blues under there, and they released a lot of key players and made some big changes. So I'm going to use the word curious because I can't think of the other word to use, but I'm curious to see what becomes of that.
Cautiously.
Yeah,
something.
Brian, Athletic Brewing Company. We've got a non-alcoholic brewery in the number 10 spot there. So big stuff with that. Another one that always surprised me, New Glarus Brewing is in at number 11. Again, these folks only distribute in Wisconsin. So Wisconsin alone has made them the 11th largest craft brewery in the country. But I do know that a lot of Wisconsinites, Wisconsonians, I don't know what term they use there, really, but they're loyal. They're loyal to their New Glarus. So they've got a very, very strong fan base there. And then number 12, we got Deschutes Brewery there, rounding out the top 12 for it. So, Brian, I think between, you know, the overall state of the industry and you know, the top 50 stats, the number of breweries we've got there, could be worse, is what I kind of take in the big picture. It's not catastrophic. It could be worse, could be better. But, you know, we did see a lot of growth for many, many years. And that's Mo, Mike, Nate, I think you did a little Googling for us there on the Duval Mortgage. Who all falls under that umbrella?
Firestone Walker, Boulevard, and Alma Gang are the domestic brands.
Okay.
That's right.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I always forget.
So if they all fall under that brand and we get Boulevard and Alma Gang here, we should get Firestone Walker on the shelves in Georgia.
Correct.
So
yeah,
I don't know why we're getting punked out with that, because we definitely could use some of that there.
I would really like to get a number of their things, like the Pivo Pills, and I mean, there's a variety of
Parabola. The anniversary beers are always stellar.
Now, with some of those, they may be blended up to be above our ABV limits here, but I think that there are some that should be under it. So it would be really cool to see that here. But
honestly, probably a lot of the ones I would really like to see here are probably over our limit, like those anniversary blends and different stuff.
Probably.
But again, having a Pivo Pills here would be nice.
Yes.
To at least
it would be
have
very
that,
good.
That out there. I would drink the heck out of it when it first came, and then like 6 months later, be like, oh, that's right, we get that. I forgot about that with all the other stuff I'm drinking here. But it would be nice to grab some Parabola, have a few of those.
It really would be. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Nate, are you familiar with Otto Brewery Syndrome?
I actually am.
Have you ever had it? Do you brew your own beer, Nate?
Yes, but not within the confines of my body.
Not that way. Yeah, you're not that robot from Fallout, is what you're.
No, I'm not that robot from Fallout.
Yeah.
Oh, the robot has auto
brewery. He has auto brewery syndrome. Yeah, he sure does. He sure does. But Brian, some interesting news this week, and I think you have all the details here, so I'm gonna hand this over to you. But some dude got a DUI and he got out of it.
Yeah, in Belgium. So a Belgian man was recently acquitted of drunk driving charges because he has auto brewery syndrome, or ABS, not anti-lock brakes, but I assume he has anti-lock brakes.
Probably those two.
Pretty standard these days.
Right.
So what is auto brewery syndrome? It's a rare medical condition where the gastrointestinal tract ferments carbohydrates, producing enough ethanol to get you legally intoxicated. So your guts ferment all the carbs you eat, basically. The cause is an overgrowth of the right kinds of bacteria or fungi in your digestive system. And that includes brewer's yeast, like Saccharomyces cerevisiae is one of them. But there are other varieties that I don't have handy that I don't recognize that are sound less fun to me. But as it happens, the man worked at a brewery, or probably still does, actually, and he was not exhibiting or experiencing the symptoms of intoxication. That's not uncommon for people who do have a syndrome. Depending on how bad it is, you can have effects ranging from people feeling normal all the way up to them being completely gazeboed. So I think you develop a tolerance to it. If your body makes alcohol, you kind of develop a tolerance. It's like murder on your liver, I think, but you can get used to it. I have to wonder if the man somehow developed the disorder through his work at the brewery, because, I mean, he's around a lot of the Saccharomyces cerevisiae all the time, or if maybe he just boofed too many lambics, because as they say in Belgium, boofing lambics, not even once. Yeah.
That's a very popular saying over there.
It is.
You hear it a lot. Yeah. You know, I mean, it would make sense if all of that is, if he's around that all of the time. I mean, you don't hear about it often, but I guess that's a plausible way that it could have happened. It could have just changed his biome. And I guess it also depends on exactly what the guy was doing there. Maybe he was puffing fermentation vessels. So
I could
it's
be
quite I possible. Mean, maybe he was taking in that. Maybe he would get on a pool float and get in the cool ship when they were, letting that cool down and get all the stuff in there. And he just let it fall on him. Who knows, Brian?
It's possible. Yeah. Well, but, I mean, people can get popcorn lung from inhaling like vape and other stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I'm like, maybe he got brewery butt from inhaling too much yeast or something. Well, I don't know.
There was a case where some workers in a like microwave popcorn factory got the popcorn lung from inhaling diacetyl, because for anyone who does not know, artificial butter flavor is diacetyl. So it's used in, making your buttery microwave popcorn there, and can definitely, it's not good to inhale it.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. But definitely it also makes sense to me that if your body does brew its own beer, that you would get at least a certain level of tolerance if it's if it's constantly chucking it out there. I mean, but I think it would be interesting to see someone fully gazeboed, though, because that's some serious brewing going on there. I mean, you've got to have maybe they sat around drinking, sodas, Coca-Cola. They fed a lot of sugar in there. They had the ferment, the yeast and bacteria in there to do it, and I guess that was it. Tyler's chiming in saying he doesn't get Firestone Walker in Texas anymore, and I thought I knew that they were down there. Our buddies have talked about, actually our buddies in Texas have got us some before, but looks like they're pulling back. Crazy.
So if you had auto brewery syndrome and you drank a really thick sweet pastry stout, because you would be depleting, you wouldn't have the alcohol in there to save you, prevent the carbohydrates from continuing to ferment, because you'd be absorbing the alcohol away from it, leaving just the sugar behind. And that would leave a lot of sugar for all of the beasties that are in your gut to continue. So that would be the way to get super gazeboed if you had auto brewery syndrome.
I'm on board with your bro science, Brian.
Yeah,
I'll allow it there. It sounds plausible. Crazy stuff, man. And Brian, a story just to close things out here. BrewDog in the news again. And there's been so much drama around BrewDog that anytime I see a story mentioned with them, I always think, what have they done this time? Yes. And I think that the headline of the story, this is from the drinks business, and it said BrewDog, you know, enforced fail. And when you read down into it, so apparently BrewDog bought a large chunk of land that they were saying that they partnered with the Scottish Forestry Service, and they were going to, they did get a 1.2 million pound grant to create a forest over a 6-year period. And they got a little over half of those funds so far. And they did go out and they planted a lot of trees. They planted a ton of trees. Unfortunately, Brian, 92,000 of the trees died. And we don't have the exact total of how many they planted, but I'm going to assume it's more than 92,000, because if they planted and killed other trees, because of that takes some special skill there. But, well, you know, they did come back. If you read the full article, you go into it, and the climate, the weather, the conditions, everything were really bad, you know, over the time period when they planted these. And they just said it was kind of the perfect storm to hit them at a bad time. But to BrewDog's credit, they said they're not giving up. They're going to go back in, get replanted, and try and get this going. But, yeah, so they went out there with supposedly good intentions, Brian. But they do – okay. I say to BrewDog's credit, they got to go out there and replant it per the grant money.
As a condition of the grant, they're going to have to go replant a lot of that.
So, yeah, they said they're willing to do it. James Watt, he made a statement. He said, you know, this is about – he wants to plant 1 million trees, and he is willing to lose money to make it happen. Again, sounds like a noble gesture, a noble statement, but he doesn't have any choice but to replant the trees because of the grant money that he got.
Make the most of it. Like, if you've got to do it, make yourself look good.
Absolutely. Market it out there, man. Get it out there. Make a big stink of it. That is what it is all about when you do that stuff. So, yeah. So that is it, guys. That's what we've got for this week. Good times. Brian, any plans for this weekend? Anything exciting?
No, nothing comes to mind. Yeah. That's too far out for me to plan. I'm just trying to survive.
Way too far. Just making it through. Yeah. Nate, anything fun on your schedule agenda?
No, nothing terribly exciting. Last weekend we played it up, so this weekend I'm going to try and lay low.
Chill out then. You know, one of our breweries here locally became a pinball arcade too. So Brian and I headed out recently, Schoolhouse Brewing in Marietta, Georgia. They actually partnered with a pinball arcade to become kind of an outpost. So they've got about 15 machines there and a couple of my favorite vintage machines. I really dig a lot of the vintage games, Brian. There's a lot of those.
Yeah, they're fun.
I really enjoy. But they've got one for the pinball heads. They have Monster Bash. They have Medieval Madness. They have Big Lebowski there, which, Brian, I know that's one that you dig quite a bit. So. They've got a few newer machines there, but I think I could go shovel a lot of, I was going to say quarters, but a lot of dollar bills, because that's inflation even hits pinball. But I could shovel a lot into Monster Bash. Just really sit there, drink beers, play pinball, have a good time.
Or Medieval Mayhem, seeing that castle shake when you destroy the castle. Oh my God, that's so good.
Yeah, super jackpot.
Super jackpot, that's right.
Yeah. Fun games.
Yeah, good stuff.
Awesome. Well, guys, that about wraps it up for our show. We really appreciate you tuning in and hanging out with us. We hope you all have a really, really good week. And don't forget to drink local. Cheers.